Just Bricks, brought to you by Kick It Forward and Sporting News Australia. Alongside me, a very special now co-host, kind of, Damien Martin. How are you going?
I'll take it, but what's doing on your head there? I love it. Chippies forever.
Chippies forever. We've got a new sponsor, Chicken Treat, this week. So it's our first sponsor.
Oh, congratulations.
Try not to knock the merch before we
get into it. I just don't see you in a hat all that often, and I'm a sucker for chips, so I thought you were just messing with me.
I haven't got a hat head, unfortunately. I'm really sorry. But yeah, Chippies Forever, they got some good merch, actually. They have some good burgers too, which we'll get into later.
I love this time of year because March Madness for me and finals, NBL, WNBL, is the best time of the year. I'd take that over NBA finals because with March Madness, all the collegiate tournaments taking place, all the conferences, you're trying to get your automatic bid. Some conferences are stronger, so they know two or three teams will get to the NCAA tourney, and just the passion every single possession. That's what I want to see, and you rarely do in the NBA, but in college you do. In the NBL, WNBL, you're certainly doing an incredible final series in the WNBL. Absolutely heartbreaking for the Perth Lynx. Had a chance to take the lead in the dying seconds of game two here in Perth. Would have been their first championship in, what, 20 or 30 years. They had some of the old former players there in the stands. Heartbreak. You go over to Melbourne, and if you were going to lose to anyone, I think you want it to be to Lauren Jackson. it's a bitter pill to swallow when you lose a grand final, but deep down, I think that even the Lynx players probably grew up idolising the GOAT, and when they saw her go up to get her sixth WNBL championship, they're like, oh, okay, there's worse people to have lost to.
It is hard to argue with Lauren Jackson and what a legacy she leaves behind. First of the Lynx, though, they literally came as close as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Felt so bad for Annalie Malley. Like, she does so much for that team. The team's so tight. They hit the form at the right time under Petrick. What about for you? When you have those losses, when you're in a series and, you know, in your head, oh, we probably should have won it. The ball rolls a different way. The luck of basketball. How hard is it to back that up?
The high of winning a championship doesn't actually stick with you as long as the low of losing one does. Yeah. So when you win, you know, it's all about going out, celebrating. It's awesome. And then after about 4 or 5 days, it dwindles and you're like, oh, okay, you know, what's next? Mm. Okay, I might try and win another. That's 4 or 5 days. When you lose, you want to get back out on court the next day. You can't sleep that night. You're frustrated. It's just overwhelming, the emotions. And so I dare say every single one of those Lynx players have had an incredible season. They should be celebrating what was special, but they're probably back on court today or tomorrow because they don't want to replicate how it finished this year. But having a taste, getting so close, they'll do whatever it takes now to try and go this that one step further and hold up the trophy.
Lauren Jackson not playing in the Olympics. Are you annoyed by that? Would you love to see her there?
The whole country wants to see her playing. And even if she was literally the 12th player on that bench, she'd have a role that she'll do better than anyone else with her leadership, with the aura that she brings. And there's no way if you take her, she's not working her way into that rotation. What we saw at the World Cup was amazing. What we saw in the semi-finals when she dropped, 28 points to get the Southside Flyers across the line was amazing. And I think if she did put a hand up, go to another Olympics, she would help that team win another medal.
Jock Landale, he's picked up his... Well, he's kind of gone ahead of a lot of people now. He's playing, scoring about 10 points per game in his last 5 outings in sort of double-digit minutes now after being kind of on the outer for a lot of the season. What have you seen from him? What do you put it down to?
Look, a lot of it's just come down to, does the coach think you're going to fit a certain role? And he does, because he's so consistent. He's going to play, you know, I critiqued how I don't necessarily always enjoy the NBA because it doesn't seem like every possession matters, whereas Jock gives his all every single possession. And maybe being in and out a little bit made him realize, if I want to make the most of this opportunity, I've got to make sure that the minutes I get given are quality minutes. And it's hard to say that when he's on the court, they're not a better team. You know, it's hard not to say they aren't, because they are. He makes the superstars be able to shine in what their strengths are, because he'll do all the one percenters, set great screens, go after every rebound, run the lanes really hard. And that goes noticed by coaches. And then inevitably, they don't have an excuse not to play him. And he's been rewarded with quality minutes that he's earned.
I saw Bogut talking about, you know, the benefit of being an informed player, like in the NBL where you're actually playing strong minutes. Does this impact anything for the Boomers, do you think? Whether or not they still look at Magne, who's been playing so well in the NBL. Because Landale and Reith, it's a pretty strong position to be in now compared to the World Cup, where Landale went down with an injury. And you have Reith still finding his feet, playing well, but like, it probably doesn't have the same confidence now going into Olympics, where, you know, he's one of the most successful guys in an NBA team that year?
Yeah, so Duop Reith, you know, he'll start. You'll have Landale start.
Oh, you think he'll start?
Yeah, I think he'll still start. I mean, he dropped, what, 28 points in one game, got rewarded with a contract with Portland Trail Blazers instead of it being a two-way. So he'd be full of confidence. You know, gets back to Perth soon. He'll get back on court straight away. So I think that Duop Reith, Jock Landale will be starting big man combination. Jock not playing at the World Cup significantly hurt the team. I thought they were a little undersized. But Magne, in my opinion, should be one of the first names called into the squad.
Yeah, okay.
And then once he's in that squad, he's got to prove that what we've seen in the NBL, he can do that alongside the likes of those two names I mentioned before, but also Nick Kay, Xavier Cooks, two players who have been doing really well in Japan and are in form in the leagues that they've been playing in. So I would have him in the mix. And then I'd bring in some of the youngsters, so that next generation, the Harry Wessels currently at St. Mary's, and obviously Rocco Zakarski over there with Brisbane. And then if you look at those 6'8" quality Australian big men, maybe only four or five are legitimately putting their hand up for selection for this Olympic campaign, but the sooner you ingrain them in that culture, the better it is for the program moving forward.
In COVID, this is a random story, but in COVID, I remember Counterpinder and Reith, we were back in Perth, and we were allowed to go outside, we were allowed to play basketball and stuff, but none of the stadiums were open.
Yep.
So we were playing 3-on-3 in West Perth at Donnie Tarko, and I'd interviewed Reith for the West Australian, and I was still playing a bit, but all a bunch of our NBL1 guys were going down to play, and like sort of said, oh, by the way, mate, we play on Tuesdays and Thursdays, just to like keep sane. He's like, yeah, I might come down, and he rocked up. And like, didn't just rock up.
He came to play.
Mate, it was like him and Ben Purser, who's a mutual friend of ours, just going at each other, but in a good way.
Yeah.
I think Pinder ended up being injured or something. But Reith was like, he was currently signed to a Lithuanian EuroLeague side. I think it was Red Star or something. And he's playing at West Perth in like on this uneven floor and banging, like dropping his shoulder. And he ended up winning. Like, he played really well. And this is just before he sort of joined Illawarra.
So you're the reason. You're the reason he's in the NBA. Credit, that's where we're going with this.
The NCAA, March Madness is coming up. We've spoken a lot about Johnny Furphy. Proctor is another big name. But I wanted to talk about Rayne Smith in particular.
Yep.
Is he with Charleston?
Charleston
right now. He's a junior right now. Absolute lights out shooter from a town of about 20,000 in northern Tasmania. He was picked up in the under-18 Nationals to go to the AIS because he had a 40-point game alongside Taron Armstrong, who's now at the Cairns Taipans, and they sort of found him. And he's really come into his own at a sort of a smaller school.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about him, especially in the sort of agency world?
Well, it's nice to finally see a left-handed guard who can shoot the three. I'm so jealous of how he can shoot the rock. And the thing that Rayne has done with himself is put himself in a position where, you know, every single NBL club would sign him in a heartbeat. I've got no doubt about that. But because of the success he's had at Charleston, he can go back and leave a legacy where he'll become the greatest three-point shooter of all time, potentially lead the school in all-time scoring. Just all of these things that, you know, you mentioned Jock Landale, Patty Mills, Matthew Dellavedova, Daniel Kickett, they've all got their jersey retired at St. Mary's Gales. And it means the world to them. And I look at Rayne, I'm like, well, you can come back and sure, you could turn pro right now, or go back to Charleston, become the greatest guard of all time that university has ever seen. Remember, they're winning their conference. He was all conference MVP. So he can play, but very few players get to leave a legacy that'll never be forgotten. And he's in that position. So great kid, down to earth, has never forgotten his upbringing. He'll be able to dominate in the NBL one day. He'll be one of the best shooters. You know, Chris Golding, I've got a question for you later about Golding, but when we talk finals, but Rayne could go on to have a prolific career in the NBL. He's more than just a 3-and-D. He can do a bit of everything. So love the kid, but in a way, I'm actually kind of hoping he goes back to university because he could just smash every record that school's ever seen.
Yeah, it's exciting to watch. And some of the numbers of threes he's putting up, like, you know, he had a 23-attempt game the other day and things like that. And he's making them too, which is always good.
I got a quick story. So it wasn't quite 23, but I remember we played the Kings.
Yeah.
And it must have been the grand final, semis, whatever it was. And we landed back in Perth. We won. And I happened to hit a three-pointer in the fourth quarter. And as we landed, the first question that Craig O'Donoghue, the journo at the West Australian, asked me was like, "Hey, mate, how does it feel you hit your first three in 16 attempts?" I was like, "Well, I'd been keeping count." I didn't realize how high I'd been creeping up. So that was across multiple games, reined it, you know, in the one. But yeah, when it comes to that, I was like, "Oh, yeah, I did have
mate, good culture." It's because no one was even keeping track. They just want you to score.
I was probably just me that wasn't keeping track. Shot. Maybe Trev was thinking, "Passer, what are you doing?"
It says, "Don't shoot on the ball."
Yeah, exactly.
You're too happy. Let's go to the NBL finals quickly. Melbourne and the Jack Jumpers play tonight. Unbelievable work by the Jack Jumpers to make another NBL finals series. It seems like Scott Roth is really brewing something amazing down there. Before we get to Melbourne, Jack McVeigh, he plays like he's at a YMCA. He plays like he's down at the park with me and Dwop. And but he's doing 1 foot fadeaways. He's finding people for the drop off pass. He's hitting threes. This is in the semi-final series. How do they unlock him and the rest of the team in this? Because he's been so effective.
The strength of Tassie is they play as a team. They get it to their hot guy and they're willing to make the open pass to give up a good shot for a great. The strength of Melbourne is they actually stop some of the ball reversal. Mm. They played the on-ball screens differently to how the Wildcats did. So while the Wildcats wanted to clog the key and make Tassie score from the outside or congest it if Milton Doyle went off the dribble, if Jordan Crawford went off the dribble, Tassie were allowed to move it from east to west and get it to the players they wanted in the spots their players wanted to get it in. And it worked in game one for Perth, you know, for the half of game two it did. In game three, Tassie were just free-flowing and too good with their execution. So they've got to be able to execute. So whether that means setting better screens, the timing of the cuts is there, because when they get rotation and then eventually it finds its way into the hands of Jack, he's that good of a shooter that he either knocks down the open one or on a late closeout or a long closeout, he can go off the dribble. But he's not necessarily the Bryce Cotton or the Jordan Crawford or the Milton Doyle who get him in a pick and roll situation or an ISO situation, they'll still go and create.
Yeah.
It's more off movement and he usually makes the right decision, but they've got to set good screens, run plays for him, not just necessarily wait for it to unfold within the system, because the scouting report of Melbourne is as good as it gets and they're trying to take away options A and B, but does Tassie have option C that involves McVeigh getting the ball?
What have you made of Melbourne? You said you had a question about Golding before.
Well, my question is not necessarily about the finals. It's about his season.
Okay.
So I saw something come out where I want to say he's into seventh or eighth for most threes made during a season in the NBL, but he's the only player on that list during the 40-minute era. So should we be treating his performances right now? He's probably about 20 or 30 behind. Mm. I think Shane Hill, Andrew Gaze are on the list a couple of times. John Reilly's on the list a couple of times. Rucker's on there as well. Copes is on there. But if he used to continue to make two or three a game, he could actually finish on top of that list in the 40-minute era. Are we giving him the respect, one, of what he's achieved behind the arc this season? And two, does he become an automatic selection for Paris because he can spread the floor? Josh Giddey's not renowned for being a knockdown three-point shooter. Some of the other players they take aren't necessarily 40-plus percent shooters. Does Golden become not just a lock for that team, but also in the rotation just to spread the floor?
Well, I think that was one of the big takeaways from the world champs was like we weren't shooting well. We had all these guys that were great wing defenders, great creators, but we couldn't shoot. And I thought that that was the one of the guys that could play more. Potentially he's an automatic. I think he's comfortable in Paris. He played in Paris for a bit as well. I know that means absolutely nothing. But as far as the question about the era, I always find it interesting that Shane Hill and Andrew Gaze, they were kind of ahead of the curve of world basketball. Like they were shooting so many threes, like 10 threes a game. And then it was only Golding who sort of mirrors those guys and goes beyond them. Yeah, I think I don't think there's a better shooter right now. He's still playing at the peak of his powers. He's playing alongside these guys. And if he's going to relinquish any of the pressure on a guy like Josh Giddey, then he kind of needs to be there, especially if like the other... if Mills and Ingles aren't at their best.
Yeah, if they can't play 30 minutes each.
Yeah. What about you? Like, do you think...
Yeah, I take him. Yeah. I take him because of the balance he offers. Just another look. Prolific scorer, will back himself, play with confidence, can come off the bench and not be afraid to let it fly. But anyway, to go back to your question, there is a look in Dellavedova's eyes. I honestly don't know what Tassie can do, because I think Dele will do even more. And I'm not just saying with ball in hand, you know, he's just going to go and get it done himself. But his IQ is ridiculous. Getting Joe Lewis-Akiul, the way he gets him involved is amazing. The way he can call plays to make sure Goulden gets the ball at the right times. And if there's a loose ball, I don't know who thinks they can win it ahead of Dele. And he's almost got that fear factor that he's going for it regardless, even if it means he's going to potentially break his leg, his arm, you know, whatever it's called, or the opposition's leg or back in just by accident. But just he's focused on that boy. He's going to do whatever it takes to win. And sometimes you can just ride on the coattails of someone who's so determined, combine that with high basketball IQ and skill. And yeah, I think that's the biggest dilemma that Tassie have, is how do you take out the Dele factor? And that's not the points on the board, which he's still contributing to. It's just the amount of time he's on the court, Melbourne are going to be better. And then you got him on the court, you got the best defensive player in the league alongside him. You got some great scorers. Luke Travers is doing his thing. They're just a very well-balanced team, but at a very high level, all in form and all doing what it takes to win a championship.
The Travers decision now in hindsight seems... kind of brilliant of the young player to go there and also learn from guys like Dele as well. Like imagine being alongside him as well in this period where he's got the biggest chip on his shoulder ever. Is he a lock for you for the Boomers then as well? Like
I'd love to see him there. He's deserving of the camp because I think that because he's so smart, he'll bring out the best in whoever else is alongside him. It's just a case of, where does Gorgon see him fit in? Because he's got to be out on the court to be able to run those plays to make his teammates better. But if Gorge deep down doesn't think there's 10 minutes a game that he's going to be able to get Dele involved, then unfortunately I don't think he gets selected. If I was the coach, I would be saying, yeah, I'll find 10 for Dele because he does things that don't show up in the box score. He does things to his teammates that help them play better.
And he wins games.
So look, Gorge, you know, Nelly, the whole coaching staff, they're much smarter than I am. And I'm biased. I absolutely love Dele. So I'd love to see him there. It's just that he's playing in one of the toughest positions for this team selection.
We're going to dive into some hot takes from around the basketball world in a new segment, Damien. Is that all right?
I would love to.
Okay, this is Hot Takes brought to you by Chicken Treat to celebrate their new Frank's Red Hot Thick Sauce range. It's actually pretty delicious. Anyway, this is the burger. All right, being a six-time Defensive Player of the Year. Sorry, just off the top of my head, they renamed the trophy after you, right?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Amazing. I actually turned my phone off after I did my retirement speech. Turned it off. Put it on flight mode, sorry. Gave it to my daughter just to play some games on the drive home. Just wanted to switch off mentally. When I got it back, when we arrived home, turned the flight mode off. And the first call I got was from the CEO of the NBL. And Jeremy just, you know, said a few nice words about my career. And then he asked if I was okay with them renaming the award after me. And I can remember exactly where I was, how I felt in that moment, and just absolutely blown away. And it means the world to me. So, because of COVID, I haven't been able to present it until this year.
Oh, brilliant.
I went over to Melbourne, presented it, and it was a pinch me moment at the time, and then walking out on stage and presenting it to Shay Ely this season meant the world to me. And it was funny, Gazy's got the MVP trophy named after him. He got up there and he goes, this could be changing years to come, because the player I'm about to announce will now have won four, I won six. And so at some stage, if the NBL wants to rename it after someone else, you know, that'll be totally fine. But the fact that they gave it to me and the honour of having it, it's something I'll never take
pretty
for granted.
Cool. Like, it's pretty cool to have this thing every year too. That
Trip to Melbourne, just like that.
Free trip to Melbourne, exactly. But also just like the legacy. I don't know. I think the NBA does that so well, is integrating guys like Bill Russell and stuff when he was available, obviously. And it's good the NBL are now doing that as well. Anyway, so my hot take. So Wembanyama in the NBA. He's a rookie. He's playing so well. He's really finding his feet a bit more. But defensively, he's dominant.
Yes.
People are saying he should be the Defensive Player of the Year in a very bad team, though. What do you think? Is there merit in him being the Defensive Player of the Year despite having such a bad losing record?
Yeah, there is. And I know that on social media, he went out publicly and said, go Bear, if he gets it, that's fine. Best of luck to him. He deserves it. I'm looking at the games now. I haven't seen every single game he's played, nor have I watched every single NBA game, but I do watch a fair chunk of it. What he can do, I've never seen at the defensive end. And I read a statistic the other day that he already has more career blocks than close to 82% of the rest of the league currently. Rest of the players in the league currently. It's just absolutely amazing. And he's the first player ever in the NBA with 200 plus blocks, 100 plus steals, I think it is, 200 blocks, 100 plus, it's something ridiculous. just go with me on this.
He's got a lot of them.
We might have to come up with a fact check here. But it's just amazing what he is doing in his rookie season.
Yeah, it's funny watching the guys walking in, turn around. Okay, we've really screwed up this segment. They're long answers. But in a minute, how realistic are Oklahoma's, you know, championship chances?
No, they're not going to win it.
Oh, really?
Well, okay, they're going to...
Give me a bit longer than nah.
Okay. Oh, I thought I went too long on the first. I'll have them making it to the conference semis.
Conference semis?
Yeah.
And then just learning this year and potentially not...
In years to come, I think they can potentially have 3 first rounders next year. Oh, depending on what they do with their current roster, I think they're going to win a championship or two within the next 5 years. I just don't think it's going to be this year. They're all coming into their prime. Shea's incredible. Giddy's playing good minutes. You know, they've got enough talent to go far into conference play. But in the end, I think they're another year, maybe 2 seasons away from holding up the trophy at the end.
Xavier Cooks is back in the NBL. Is he the automatic MVP favorite?
He'll come in top 3.
Top 3.
We're always going to have Bryce Cotton.
Yep.
And then depending on who some of the new imports are they bring back, I dare say there'll be a new import they put in there, Bryce and Xavier.
And do we ever see him back in the NBA?
No, that was probably his best shot. I dare say he's got an NBA out clause. He's got plenty of skill. His athleticism, his ability to block shots is NBA. It's world class. But I think now what we saw him do in Japan has warranted, you know, a big contract. I've been told it's been the biggest contract of all time for a player in the NBL. Love what the Kings are doing. They've gone out there. He can be a marquee player. So you've got to remember not all of that is on the salary cap. And, you know, they won 2 with him at the helm. He won an MVP. He's coming back and the Kings are putting together a hell of a team.
Decent coach too now.
Brian Gorge and the GOAT is back. So Sydney Kings, look, you asked about favourites going into next year. Regardless of whether Melbourne or Tassie win it this season, I dare say the Kings start as favourites.
Damien, thanks so much. And thanks to Chicken Treat for jumping on board, Just Bricks. For the next couple of months, check out them, their new range, Frank's Red Hot Sauce, Big Sauce range, next time we can.
Cheers, mate.
Good hat.
Love it.